Well, hello, friends. Hi. And we're working together now on the second initiation and on a compilation that has quite a few of the references for the second initiation. Maybe not all, but I think very many of the important ones. And I thought we could benefit by going over these together. Let's see where we are. Should be right here, and this is not it, and I think this is it. Right, okay. So this is the we're beginning the second initiation compilation video, program number 4. And our first discussion here, since these are only in book order, we might say, is about the prerequisites to the second initiation. Basically, what you do is you add the prerequisites. You take the prerequisites of the first and add a few more things. Wisdom is the sublimation of the intellect. It is the intellect applied, I think, to a higher and more capacious picture in consciousness. It carries with it the abstract mind and the intuition rather than only the concrete intellect. But this involves the sublimation of the higher as well as the lower aspects of the mind, meaning that it's not enough to deal only with the intellect, but even the abstract mind has to be sublimated. So even the abstract mind has to be sublimated and transformed into the intuition. So, and you know, when we deal with what's called buddhi, or the buddhic plane, and that capacity on the buddhic plane we call buddhi, we are definitely dealing with the pure reason and the intuition. As a matter of fact, buddhi has been called also wisdom. So that when we have the buddhic infusion via the synthesis petals and, let us say, especially those, and via the sacrifice petals, I would say, then that infusion fills the mind and the heart with what is perceived on the buddhic plane, which is truthful. And is wisdom revealing a way forward which is unerring and not a way forward that is subject to error. It also reveals relationships through pure reason which are unerring. So here we have wisdom as a blend of intuition, spiritual perception. Now, you know, this is intuitive instinct and spiritual perception are factors which are operative at the third degree. Okay, at the third degree. A cooperation with the plan, because the plan is widely understood, perhaps even in terms of some impacts of the divine purpose, and a spontaneous, which means a Uranian in a way, and not necessarily reason from step to step, a spontaneous intellectual appreciation of that which is contacted. And all this is fused and blended with and by love, with which I've defined above, plus that esoteric sense which must be unfolded before the second initiation can be taken. This is from the externalization of the hierarchy, apparently page 7. So we have a fantastic definition of wisdom here. And I'm going to, I think what I'm going to do is, I'm going to put it in the yellow highlight because it is so important. Now, the esoteric sense, which is a type of intuitive apprehension and which is a tapping of some of the energy of the Buddhic plane, has to be in place before the second initiation. So look at the planets of the second initiation, Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. They're all involved with the sense of wisdom, even though Mercury, which is called Bud, is another planet of wisdom, which must be included. I suppose every one of the gods, every one of the planetary deities, has its own approach to wisdom. But Jupiter especially is there. It's one of the rulers of the Buddhic plane, and Neptune, one of the rulers of the Buddhic plane, and Mercury too, one of the rulers of the Buddhic plane, where wisdom really begins to be found, because it is a synthesizing and a unifying of what knowledge occurs within the mind. So a blend of the intuition, spiritual perception, which we remember is one of those things along with intuitive instinct, which we need at the third degree, cooperation with the plan, because one sees its real destiny and its purpose, a spontaneous intellectual appreciation, so it's an immediate Uranian spontaneous intellectual appreciation, remembering that Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury, just the way Neptune is the higher octave of Venus, so hence the spontaneity here of the foremost of the synthesizing planets, the spontaneous intellectual appreciation of that which is contacted. Whenever I find the word appreciation, I think of Venus as well, which as a planet has much of Buddhi in it, even though for man it rules the higher mind. And all this is fused and blended with and by love. So in a way he's saying there is no real wisdom without the heart and the heart and the head and without the presence of true love. And he's defined that above, I guess, plus the esoteric sense which must be unfolded before the second initiation. And I'm wondering, you know, it says externalization of the hierarchy, page 7, but I'm really wondering if this is not something that comes in rather glamour, a world problem. So let's just see as we copy one of this. It is a blend of intuition. I'm going to copy that and see where it takes us. Might as well know whether our reference is correct. So there's only one of those, and it comes in. Yes, it does. It comes in on, but it comes in on page 99. All right. So something is definitely off there, and at least we've corrected that. Okay, now we go on further. And we're dealing now with the temptation of Christ and how it occurred between the second and third initiation. I have a feeling, you know, it's more of a reenactment. And even if it was the temptation of the Master Jesus, that would be a reenactment, because already as Joshua the high priest, he had taken the third initiation. So he, the Christ Jesus phenomenon, cooperation, was demonstrating for humanity certain phases of the process of growth. And we would call the second initiation the baptism, but it wasn't. It was the dramatization of what for us is really the second initiation, and a dramatization later in the desert of the third initiation, the transfiguration. So these high souls are not really taking these lower initiations of the threshold. The second initiation, that of the baptism, then took place. This is Alice Bailey writing. Christ had achieved manhood. Of course, as head of the hierarchy, he had achieved much more. But he was dramatizing this for humanity. And this attainment was followed immediately by a definite and conscious rejection of evil. Many people are tempted after the second initiation by the evil forces, which say, look, you know, you're a pretty high being here. Why not demonstrate it and get recognized for it and have others bow down to you and increase your power? So there comes a demonstration of evil following the second initiation in the lives of us all. And do we succumb? Now, even some of the Nazis, maybe even Hitler, and that's hard to believe, of course, that he really stood before the Christ, but he was an initiate, and shows you that even standing before the Christ or whoever is the initiator bringing you into the second degree, that you can still deviate so strongly. But let's just say the temptation of power, the love of power, ambition comes in after the second degree. And which way do we go? If we pass the temptations in the desert, then we go towards the Syrian line of initiation. It doesn't mean we're necessarily at the sixth degree going to take the path to Sirius, but it's called the Syrian line. And if we don't, we deviate off into some form of Mahatic initiations, which have to do with the David Kingdom and which lead into deeper materiality, although into certain types of power of the concrete mind. So anyway, all of us will face this conscious rejection of evil. Recognition of work to be done must be succeeded by the purification of the one who must thus work. So let's just say in the initiation, second initiation, we recognize R-E-C-Z, the work to be done. And then we have to be free from at least that level of evil in order to perform that work. This Christ gave in the victory of the three temptations. So they were worked out on a much higher level in a way. I mean, you know, we are not going to confront as second degree initiates. None of us is going to confront that degree of intensity of evil that Christ in the desert or Christ Jesus in the desert confronted. So the freedom from evil Christ demonstrated in principle as the victory of the three temptations. Now, who was there with him to write that down? That's a question. And there were probably no one was there before the third degree in the desert to write it down. You wonder how it did get written down, how it was related. And then, only after this evidenced preparation, do we read that he proceeded to teach. So we somehow must demonstrate, we as initiates of the threshold must demonstrate that we have overcome a degree of evil and can thus impart the truth of the ageless wisdom. So, you know, whether we have been in the desert for that or whether we are passing through it now or whether it lies ahead, this is a story about that which every initiate of the threshold must pass in order to be liberated to go on to become a true initiate, not just one who is a probationary initiate. The initiations are preliminary, the first and second, and depending on how we do with them, especially in the desert, alone, and realizing what we might do if we use power selfishly, only then are we in a position to move forward on the real path of initiation. Okay, now what is it that's demonstrated at the five initiations, and what book is this from? Glamour, a World Problem. In the first initiation, this is about the dweller, it's kind of interesting. The disciple demonstrates that he has resolved the dualities of the physical plane, now that is the etheric and the physical nature, which are one in a way and yet are dual, and can rightly impose etheric energy, which carries still higher energies of the soul, presumably to some degree. The etheric energy, the higher of the two, upon the physical energy. The physical energy would sort of run away with things, and it is of a lower nature, but it must be guided by the higher spiritual energies, which supposedly the etheric body begins to carry at the first initiation. You know, the energy of the knowledge petals working through the throat center. And of course, this is in a way a Lemurian initiation, and is a repetition of that ancient type of initiation in old Lemuria, where the initiate of the first degree had to demonstrate etheric power over a physical tendency. So in a way, it's a bit of a recapitulation of something that happened a long time ago, and yet there are many humans at this time who do let the instincts of the physical body sort of run away with them, and that has to be corrected so that the generic seventh ray of the etheric body, I say generic, holds in check and does direct the generic third ray of the dense physical body. That doesn't mean that we're splitting the rays and there are really two rays, one of the physical nature and one of the etheric body. I don't think that's the case, and DK didn't indicate that it was, even though some ray theorists have split the two and said, well, here's the ray of your physical body and here's the ray of your etheric body. I think that's just as serious a mistake as the people who look at the rays of the spiritual triad and think there is a different ray for each one of the permanent atoms of the spiritual triad, when in fact there is only one ray, and it turns out to be the ray by which our soul is known. So if you want to get more into that, you go to Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, page 168 and 169. In the second initiation, and this is our subject, the initiate demonstrates that he can choose between the pairs of opposites and proceed with decision upon the middle way. We might call this, in a way, the way of the soul, the type. And the pairs of opposites, you know, obviously vertically, one leads to soul and the other to the expression of the strictly personality tendencies. And, you know, there's a way to look at the pairs of opposites. I've done this, I think, in some talks at the conferences. Look at them vertically, but also look at them horizontally, one not being better than the other, but just greatly contrasted. When you look at the pairs of opposites vertically, one is relatively better than the other. We consider the soul of higher quality than the personality. In the third initiation, the initiate can employ the intuition for the right perception of truth. You know, so real intuition is coming into play. And in that initiation, he catches the first real glimpse of the dwell around the threshold and the angel of the presence. As much of the solar angel as can demonstrate through the egoic lotus without destroying it. You know, the solar angel has been outside the solar system altogether and has been trained on Sirius, presumably, and has been to the cosmic astral plane and has fallen by will back down onto the cosmic physical plane, but is an immensely powerful being, and it could only invest, I think, so much of itself in the egoic lotus without shaking it apart. And so I think the part that it does invest in the egoic lotus is the angel of the presence. And then we're talking here about the entirety of the dweller on the threshold, the integrated, more or less integrated dweller on the threshold. Dweller on the threshold. Well, I wonder how we do that. DWDOT. Okay, well, I'll just make it this way. DWDOT. And we'll call it dweller on the threshold of initiation. Okay, DWOTT. All right, that'll be. So, the integrated dweller on the threshold, you know, you might see a view here of an aspect of the dweller on your way through the other initiations. I say, like a tooth here and a fang there, and, you know, these horrible kinds of images of this greater negative being, which represents all of the unredeemed aspects of one's own nature brought together as an integrated opponent. But you don't really see the whole thing. And maybe by this time, when the angel of the presence and the soul in incarnation, or the personality, are beginning to be fused and blended, you begin to see what is this great resistance of unredeemed energy or force, which is still blocking your way. In the fourth initiation, this is, you know, beyond all of us here, the initiate demonstrates his ability to produce a complete at-one-ment between the higher and lower aspect of the soul in manifestation. So that's really a fusion, a complete fusion, and sees the dweller on the threshold merge into the angel of the presence with which the disciple identifies. Okay, so we somehow realize that what's going on within the egoic lotus is a blend of what we are as a monadic projection and a solar angelic infusion, if I can put it that way. Now, eventually that infusion is withdrawn and the solar angel returns to a source within the sun or within the solar logos, and we are left with our own monadic projection unsupported by the solar angel, but then we've gathered so much that we can support ourselves. So let's just say, and I think it's true, that complete soul infusion, SLM, complete soul infusion occurs at the fourth initiation. So the initiate demonstrates his ability to produce the union between the redeemed personality. The dweller is becoming very much redeemed here and is of high quality and is no longer resisting that part of us which is the blend of the monad and the angel of the presence. Even a high ranking personality can resist, and that's one of the reasons we tend not to follow the Christ after the third initiation. We go sadly away, you know, for a while, The rich young man goes sadly away, wanting to rely upon his accumulations within the causal body rather than relinquishing them, giving them up entirely to the purpose of the Christ, of the triad, of the Buddha, of the head of the hierarchy. You know, it's a great sacrifice. Now, this is kind of interesting. In the fifth initiation, here words fail to express the truth. He sees the dweller on the threshold, the angel, and the presence. And by the presence, here we mean the monad, merge into the divine synthesis, and the angel, advanced disciple, is the angel, because the angel has returned. The angel of the presence has returned, and he himself has become the angel. Angel of the presence. The triad is still existing, but it is being, it's the true ego or the true soul, and it's a projection of the monad, and it's being, in a way, infused by the monad. So the presence is the monad. The angel is what the disciple has become, and he is now living in his true impersonal soul, which is the triad, and whatever remains of the personality, maybe it's a Maya Varupa, maybe it's a projection, all of these are merged into one divine synthesis. It's kind of, you know, oftentimes the dweller on the threshold is called the personality, a high-grade personality, and it shouldn't really exist anymore at the fifth initiation except as a projection, kind of a Maya Virupa. And the angel has returned to the heart of the sun, or maybe in some cases the central spiritual sun, but he himself has become what the angel has been to him. He has that kind of energy. It's true he hasn't yet been trained on Sirius, but he has enough of the energy within the triad, within his true ego, so to speak, to be called angelic. And of course, the presence is always the monad. So, you know, in a way, there are some mysteries here when you consider the fusion of these three, two of which should already have been dissipated, or maybe that's not exactly the right word, have been withdrawn. And somehow, in a way, destroyed, because by the fifth degree, the normal personality and the normal egoic lotus are destroyed. So if you're going to get a personality, it's got to be a Maya Varupa. And if you're going to get something that we think of as a egoic lotus, it's not going to be that. It's really going to be the triad considered to be the ego, and the presence remains the presence. So I hope that's a little bit clear and has offered some ideas. Man becomes his own angel. Man at the fourth degree, in a way, becomes angelic. There has to be a place where there's a fusion between the Deva kingdom and the human kingdom. I mean, all the great planetary logoi are such fusions, and maybe that ultimately occurs when the monad is involved and in relation to the monadic plane. Because after all, the spiritual triad is a projection of the monad. So, and what man has been as a soul in incarnation is also ultimately a projection of the monad. And all of these things, these different aspects of the monad, are blending and fusing together at the fifth degree. We don't know anything about that really from a practical point of view, but okay, at least we have something of an anticipation of what it will be, what it will be like. The next, also from Glamour, the technique of light, Raja Yoga, and the second initiation. Well, some of us have been working in the Glamour book and using a meditation based upon the technique of light projected from the Ajna center, and really from a center more in the middle of the head surrounding the pineal gland. By means of this technique, the illumined mind, Venus really, in a way, assumes control over the astral or emotional body and dissipates glamour. It's a bit like a burning glass, a magnifying glass, intensifying a beam of intellectual and soul light supported by the vitality of the personality, and it dissipates the clouds, you know, just the way the sun shining upon a cloudy day near the ocean after a while dissipates those clouds, you know, so that by 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, noon, all those clouds are gone. So the illumined mind assumes control over the astral or emotional body and dissipates glamour. And this this relates to the fifth ray. So when the light pours in, the glamour fades out, and we're told that the fifth ray lord is a being of the, what does he say, something intensest luminosity, the most luminous of all the ray lords, whereas interesting intensest, I'm not sure that that's very good, if there's such a word, intensest, we'll add it to the dictionary anyway. The most luminous type of soul is the second ray soul, but the most luminous and advanced ray lord is the fifth ray lord, and that's pretty much like Venus being, in terms of our earthly perception, the most luminous of the planets, not the oldest of the planets, not necessarily the most advanced, but in its own cycle of development, it is the furthest along, the most mature for the cycle it has to run. So illumination dominates, and the vision of reality can be seen, and this is obviously because of the dissipation of glamour. This technique is related to Raja Yoga, and its goal is the second initiation. So, interestingly, the de-glamorizing meditations given in Glamour World Problem are preparing for the second initiation. And maybe those who are working along those lines should realize that as they clear the glamour in their own astral body and then attempt to do something similar in group form for the group and for humanity, they are preparing themselves for the second initiation. It produces the ability to tread the path of discipleship. Now, the real path, we might say, beginning at the midway point between the first initiation and the second initiation. At least there's no way to predict the exact beginning of it. Many factors are involved, including one's own relationship to a being who is now a master, and that relationship having existed for a long time. But at least by the time the second initiation is in sight, whether it's, you know, 4, 3, 2, 1, whatever incarnations ahead, the possibility of accepted discipleship should be there. Now we're just speaking in generalities. So it produces the ability to tread the real path of discipleship, which is, I want to call it accepted discipleship, and enables the man to live a life enlightened by divinity. And this is, remember, This is on the way to the second initiation. So by the time that initiation is taken, there is the illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. So by the time second initiation is taken, there is the illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. All of that is about the life which is enlightened by divinity. So really, as we enter the stream of the second degree, there is an intensification of the light. I suppose much depends upon the soul ray and personality ray, but there is in general an intensification of the light and the raising of the solar plexus to the heart center and the stimulation very much of the throat center, which is a mental center and very creative and sensitive to the light. And that throat center is coming under the rulership of Saturn and even to a degree of Uranus, and no longer the producer of wild and useless forms under the rulership of Earth. Illumination is the applied power of transformation. Now, that's one of those statements that really has to be considered as a kind of a mantram for our consideration. And let's just say, putting it simply, the light is transformative in a practical manner. So the more spiritual light, the greater the transformation of the physical plane. Okay. And also of the astral plane. Because the astral plane is the plane to which the factor of transformation specifically applies. Transmutation somewhat to the physical plane, transfiguration to the mental plane, maybe translation to the Buddhic plane, and transubstantiation. Can that come in even higher? I'm not sure. Okay, so let's just say all of this has been about the relation of light to the second initiation. And you have, as DK has said, you have the illuminated mind and spiritual intelligence, the illumination of the mind and spiritual intelligence. And you also have the transformation of desire into love. And basically the kind of transformation which sees heart energy become more important than solar plexus energy. A lot of people, of course, will be using that sixth ray as that transformation is occurring. And Neptune with his sixth ray will be important in uplifting the desire nature of the solar plexus into the love and inclusiveness nature of the heart. Neptune has a lot of the 2-4-6 line related to the 6 of the astral plane, the 4 of the Buddhic plane, and the 2 of the monadic plane. Now here's about John, the Baptist, and the River Jordan. If there's a River Jordan without, there's got to be a River Jordan within. And he was the disciple prior to the second initiation. Supposedly he was a Gemini, that's what Master DK says, and Gemini represents duality and the possible increasing fusion of the dualities. And sometimes when I think about John and his sacrifice and so forth, I think of the sign Pisces. He found himself related to water and to the cleansing effective water, and that relationship to water was at the beginning of the age of Pisces. So it says here, it was to this that John the Baptist referred when he said, "He shall increase, but I must decrease." It's a Geminian statement. I recognize my other self, the normal personal self, and in the waning, the light reduction of that self, I, the true and higher self, the soul, must grow and glow. And he spoke these words as a disciple. He certainly was a disciple, very close to the second initiation, and he was taking so many people through an external symbolic baptism, probably propelled him through the second initiation, and even baptized the Christ, well, his cousin, or was it his relative, Jesuit Jesus, and it was at that point that the ongoing cooperation between Lord Maitreya, the Christ, and Jesus became solid, and the Christ really took over the consciousness and body of Jesus to a very full extent. So from that time on, there was the possibility of meeting the Christ fully, or very fully, in Jesus. It's kind of interesting at the second degree, the sixth petal is completely open, just the way at the first degree, the fifth petal of the gold lotus is completely open. And we're told that unless that sixth petal is open, that kind of cooperation where a more advanced teacher comes into your body, I suppose via Neptune, and takes over your body and speaks through your body and teaches and acts while you stand aside, until the sixth petal is open, that cannot occur. So that's something to bear in mind, and how important the second degree really is for increased association, intimate association with the members of the hierarchy. So the second initiation of the threshold. Well, these are threshold initiations. The third initiation is really the first solar initiation, and no longer threshold initiations, no longer probationary initiations, but something that is real, something that is solar, something that is true in the initiatory sequence. And here is that, you know, famous little statement, which is so hard to believe in some ways, you know, given our view of other people and our estimation of them and their estimation of us and so forth. At the second initiation, once the second initiation is taken, the progress will be rapid. The third and fourth following probably in the same life, or the succeeding. You kind of wonder what a statement that is, but whether during the Aquarian age, this will, when the ethers are more clear in the astral plane, somewhat deglamorized, whether this will be more the case. But, you know, with Master Decay, we can't pick and choose. Alice Bailey was a faithful amanuensis and said, look, if I didn't write down exactly what he said, they may have argued about it a little bit, you know, but if I didn't write down exactly what he agreed to say, I wouldn't be his amanuensis. He would just discard me. He wouldn't use me as an amanuensis. So, but she was occultly obedient and wrote down what he said. And so he's basically saying that taking the second degree probably will give entree into the third degree and even the fourth degree in the same life or in the succeeding life. So that's something to really ponder as we think about our usefulness. Okay, what do we have here? You know, sometimes there may be a reading of things once again. This is going on from Initiation Human and Solar on the page following about the second initiation and the crisis in the control of the astral body. It's a real crisis because the astral body in our solar system is the strongest, not only for the solar logos, but certainly for our planetary logos, and in the case of most human beings, except maybe for those on the third and fifth ray, as DK seems to suggest. Second initiation is not quite so difficult for them, if that is their soul ray, third or fifth. The second initiation forms the crisis in the control of the astral body. It's really a confrontation, and you have to overcome it or not. And if you don't, you're either held in place or thrown back, and you'll get a fresh opportunity. But time will have been wasted, and that happened with some of, well, at least one of DK's students, about whom we read earlier, and maybe it happened to more. Just as at the first initiation, the control of the dense physical has been demonstrated. I guess it doesn't run away with you completely, even though a lot of disciples have acted in such a way that it looks like that control of the dense physical really is nowhere near complete, and they have been relatively high disciples. So here the control of the astral is similarly demonstrated. I mean, these are... Oh, I was just reading about Krishnamurti and all of the things that were, you know, maybe hidden from the general public, but they were true. And he was a becoming fourth degree initiate, and there were all kinds of things that you wonder whether the demonstration of the physical body really had occurred. But we're not in a position to judge, and everybody is unique when it comes to those issues. The sacrifice and death of desire has been the goal of endeavor. Well, Pluto is involved in desire disappearing into the smoke of Hades. Mars is there showing the desire which has to disappear. Vulcan is the spiritual will which brings the will in to conquer desire, and Cain kills Abel. Vulcan kills Abel, and that's operative at the second degree, I think, and climaxing in some ways at the third degree. Desire itself has been dominated by the ego. That's capital E, and we're talking here about consciousness within the egoic lotus and the presence of the solar angel as part of that consciousness, the presence of the solar angel as the angel of the presence. And only that is longed for. It's interesting because other things may come up, but in terms of the real longing and desire, it's for higher things, which is for the good of the whole and in the line of the will of the ego, Vulcan, and of the master. So, you know, things may come up, as he says, but they are not allowed to have authority over the disciple in such a way that he cannot complete his higher work. I mean, there isn't perfection here. And you say, well, here's an imperfect initiate, and DK talks about such people. I guess the degree of imperfection is relative. Sometimes it really takes the disciple down and proves an object lesson for those surrounding the disciple, and sometimes it's just a nuisance and a real bother, but the initiate achieves over those tendencies, and even though they arise, the greater tendencies, the greater longing, the greater aspiration is towards the higher things. The astral elemental is controlled, and that's a tough one for many people because it does so easily get out of control. The emotional body becomes pure and limpid, and there is the Venus-Neptune influence at the second degree, and the lower nature is rapidly dying. This is so important, you know, and there are going to be people who are passing through this, a lot of them now, not as many as the first degree, but here are the indications of what must happen. Maybe the second ray begins to take over the astral body more and more, or the higher aspects of the sixth ray, not the aspects which are turbulent and frictional. At this time, the ego grips afresh the two lower vehicles and bends them to his will. I love what he's written here because it's so absolutely Vulcanian. Vulcan has the grip. Vulcan is the fist. Vulcan bends metal, you know, while it's heating it all up, you know. So this is, I'm going to just say, this is a profoundly Vulcanian statement. At this time, the time of the second degree, you know, it is a question of how well gripped the personality is by the soul. I wonder if we think of that grip, but sometimes we feel we are in some kind of willful, oppressive, even irresistible grip of some higher power, and that's the Vulcanian stream of energy. And I said, you know, Taurus is one of those illuminating signs that is so important at this initiation of light, you know, mental illumination and spiritual intelligence. And Vulcan rules Taurus for the becoming initiate. So the light is really increasing, and the light of will is making itself felt. All of this is happening at the second degree. The aspiration and the longing to serve, love, and progress become so rapid, so strong, that rapid development is usually to be seen. And that's the increase of speed that we note at the second degree. Okay, this accounts for the fact that this initiation, the second and the third, frequently, though not invariably, follow each other in one single life, maybe the next life. It seems a little less dramatic than what he just said at the transition between page 84 and 85. But anyway, within the next life, maybe the third degree is taken. And if we take seriously what he said a little earlier, then even in the same life, the third and even the fourth. So the opportunity held out is tremendous once we're in within range of the second degree, and the aspirational nature is elevated, and the usual desires are killed by Pluto and Vulcan, and Mars is subdued at the, it shows what you have to subdue, but its influence changes into aspiration. So Mars and Neptune together can be extremely aspiring. Rapid progress. This accounts for the fact that this initiation and the third frequently, though not invariably, lest we get stuck in some kind of mental lock and say it must be so because everything changes according to the individual, follow each other in one single life. At this period of the world's history, such stimulus has been given to evolution that aspiring souls, sensing the dire and crying need of humanity, and this is a necessity, not that one simply wants to take the next initiation for one's own satisfaction. So they're sacrificing all in order to meet that need, and that's the way to go, because through sacrifice, initiations are taken, and not through caring excessively in a personal sense that one take such initiation. So you can see how important are some of these references here in initiation, human and solar. It really shows you what you will go through or recognize yourself as having gone through, or recognize yourself as in the middle of going through it. Let's see if we have time for just a bit more. I'm not sure. Maybe. Not all men, having taken the first and second initiations, are aware of it. Okay. At the same time, and this is initiation human disorder, it is quite possible for men to be functioning on the physical plane and to be actively employed in world service who have no recollection of having undergone the initiatory process, yet who nevertheless may have taken the first and maybe even the second initiation in a previous life. So that's encouraging, you know. Maybe that kind of knowledge has been relinquished so that one can do even better in concentrating on what must be done. This is the result simply of a lack of bridging from one life to another, so we actually remember, or the energies of the previous life are present and recognizable, or it may be the outcome of a definite decision by the ego, which is the man, as a projection of the monad and in cooperation with the energy of the angel of the presence. The man may be able better to work off certain karma and to carry out certain work for the lodge if he is free from occult occupation and mystic introspection during the period of any one earth life. And of course, also, the opposite may be the case. As DK tells us, it's important for people to, wake up to who they are so that they can work more effectively and with more assurance. Okay, so I think this is going to be the end of second initiation compilation, if I can only spell, program number 4. And our day here is 16 of June, 18, and we'll see a beginning of program 5. And what day it will be, we'll see. I certainly like to do a number of these a day, but mundane requirements don't always allow that to happen. Every once in a while, I have a good day, and I can do like 5 programs, and I just really feel on top of the world. But I used to do them straight in a row so that we had one program that was 5 hours long, but I've been discouraged from doing that by those who are transcribing that these into words, who tell me that when I do such a thing, it becomes so onerous that one almost gives up before one starts. Okay, friends, so that's going to be it for the moment, and we'll go on program number 5. The next, also, I think, from that wonderful little book, Initiation Human and Solar, it really gives us such a clear view of the various initiations. Okay. Oh, we'll see you later then. Bye-bye.